Thank you, Hannah. How many of you have heard the Beatitudes before? If you could just put your hand up really high so everyone could see and look around. This is not new material. This is not new material. And so it bears saying that when we hear the Beatitudes, perhaps we forget that Jesus was a Jew. He was a Jewish rabbi, and he's standing firmly in the tradition of the Hebrew Scriptures, which we call the Old Testament, which means he is a student of the Ten Commandments. We're used to hearing the Ten Commandments like those are personal directives to us, personally, one-on-one. Those actually are not that. Those are directives for a whole community. Those are directives for how a community should live together. Jesus is also the student and the recipient of the teaching from Micah, which we heard this morning. What does the Lord require of me? Do I have to bring burnt offerings and sacrifices? And we might go on in our modern language to say, do I have to throw myself on the mercy of the court? Do I have to do penance and let blood for all the wrong things I've done? Micah says, no, here's what the Lord requires of you. Do justice, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. Jesus spends his whole rabbinical life teaching the Shema, the one great law of the Hebrew people. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength. And then, of course, the second command, love your neighbor as yourself. So, Jesus begins teaching these things. He begins healing people, walking around all of Galilee with his own two feet, healing people, teaching in their synagogues, and people kind of like what he's saying, so they glom onto him. And as we begin chapter 5, it says something like this. Now, when Jesus looked around and saw all those people, he went up the mountain to get the hell away from them. When he got to the top of the mountain, he sat down. That is what rabbis normally do when they sit down to teach. And the scripture says his disciples came to him. There's no crowd on top of that mountain. It's Jesus who's trying to get away from all those people who love what he's doing and saying, and his 12 followers, the people who are really taking seriously what Jesus is saying, and they want to do what he's doing. And he sits down to teach them. He gives them a lecture, and we know that lecture as the Sermon on the Mount, of which the Beatitudes are this first part. Now, when I went to get my doctorate in preaching, the very first thing I learned is that I should do what the text is doing. The text is a lecture. Guess what you get today? It's a lecture. So we're going to do this lecture in a really particular way. I'm going to say just one or two things, and then I'm going to ask you what you hear. So if you're really brave, you should raise your hand, and then I'm going to have somebody bring a microphone to you, and you can say what you hear. We're not going to hear from everyone. Maybe I'll say something, and we'll hear from one or two people, and then I'll say something else, and we'll hear from one or two people. We're going to go like that. But this means I need someone to carry this thing around to people who raise their hands. So, fantastic. Look, Rhonda's all excited to do that. I love it. You ready for a lecture? It's me and my personality. It's going to be great. It'll be great. I'm still me. So, I promised Don that when I looked at him, it's time for him to put up a slide. So, what I did is I spent a lot of time thinking, praying, studying the Beatitudes, asking God, what the heck does this stuff mean? Because on the one hand, we have the lecture from Jesus to his disciples. Guess what? It's 2,000 years old, and we're really familiar with it. So what you're going to hear in the lecture is kind of my modern translation or corollary to Jesus' point. So first, Beatitude, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, to which I say, heaven does not belong to those who are healthy and strong. Heaven doesn't belong to those who have it all together. Jesus is saying that the kingdom of heaven belongs to the people who are broken. So what do you hear? This now's the chance for you to say in your life, what do you hear? Good, look, it's working.
Test check.
I just think of that reading that says in God's weakness, or sorry, in our weakness, God's strength can be shown.
In our weakness, God is strong. Anyone else? What do you hear? Fantastic.
It's for people that are grieving.
It's a fantastic segue to the second beatitude. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. And I hear empathy is a gift of those who've known loss. If you've never lost anything or anyone, it's hard to have empathy with those who have. What do you hear? Anyone, what do you hear?
Our experiences and challenges offer us an opportunity to serve.
Fantastic, right? You got Don?
One more. I hear this as an opportunity to build community where we can be there for each other.
Yeah, do you hear God working? That's how God works, right? We get broken and our brokenness gives us something to offer to others. Okay, Don. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And I hear, the earth is not a prize for the rich and the proud. The earth actually cannot be owned, contrary to popular belief. What do you hear? It has the corollary. Let's hear the corollary. Maybe that'll spark something. Don, what's next? This also is about the proud and the rich. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Hold on just a second, clause, and we'll like include it all together. Hold on just a second. So those who thirst for wealth and fame and comfort will experience emptiness. In other words, the things that the world says bring success and notoriety, they're actually bankrupt. They're actually bankrupt. So Klaus has the mic. You can comment on either one of these because they're kind of tied together.
Be thinking of the one around the meek will inherit the earth, and I think it goes back to Micah's statement around what God expects from us in terms of justice, mercy, and humbleness, and I think those who show those attributes ultimately will inherit the earth because they really portray meekness, in my mind. Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, the sermon, after all, is an exercise in what you hear from Scripture. That's what I'm doing, too. It's what we do when we preach. So what do you hear about these two, about inheriting the earth? Good. Here's a couple of comments.
I feel like most of us don't try to go for wealth or fame, but I think comfort's a thing that we all try to experience in some way because we're
Can you
broke.
Say that again? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, sorry. Wealth and fame aren't, I guess, tangibles that say everyone tries to attain, but I think comfort is one. I think comfort's a bit of a default, just to live a comfortable life. But if we do so, you still experience emptiness.
Yeah, the comfort zone isn't all it's cracked up to be, right?
I hear that money does not buy happiness, and the pursuit of it will not give you what you need.
So hold on to the mic for a second, Lori. So if that's true, take the case that that's true, then what should you do with the money you have?
Well, use it to help others and to give it to the hungry and thirsty.
Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. So here's what I hear. Whatever it is that you offer in your relationships, that's what's given back to you. You know, in another place in Scripture, Jesus says, by the measure you give, that's the measure that you'll receive. And this one actually has a couple of slides, so go to the next slide. So if you give love, you get love in return. If you give contempt, you get contempt in return. And then one more. Mercy can never be offered from someone who doesn't know what it is. So before you comment on this, how many of you look for the things you need from people who aren't able to give it to you? I do that all the time. I do that all the time. Like I ask lay people for the things that my colleagues should give to me, right? So let's just see if you do that. Just raise your hand really high. Raise it really high so that people can look around, right? So Jesus is kind of teaching his disciples, stop looking for what you need from the places that can't give it to you. What else do you hear? Because I've said kind of a lot about that. What else do you hear? Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Jen's got her hand up here, and then Betty in the back. Jen here, and then Betty's over there. Betty, did you have your hand up, or were you yawning? Not Betty, just Jen. You didn't have your hand up either? Well, you went like this. I saw that. Don't go like this. Anyone? Okay, does anyone have anything to say? You hear anything? Yeah, watch your twitching now. Like, don't wipe your... It's all good. Anybody? Okay, let's go to the next one. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. You know, when I looked up pure in the Greek, you know what the translation is? Clean. And I was thinking immediately of King David, who after his great sin with Bathsheba, he said, create in me a clean heart, O God. Like, forgive me from the things that I have done, right? So I came up with selfishness and evil build a barrier between you and God. If your heart isn't clean, if you're not pure of heart, you can't see God because a bunch of garbage is in the way. What do you hear? Or what's your comment based on what I heard is another fair question to ask.
I think of children. I think of their pure in heart and how as we grow, we may get tainted. We might get more cynical. And if we could live more like a child with curiosity and wonderment,
Yeah, we could say that as we grow, like, I don't think particularly we grow up and be bad. I think what happens is we get tainted by what we see in the world, and we begin to think that that's real. And it begins to take the place of the things, the real things that really are real that we can't see. You know, in one of our Eucharistic prayers, it says about Jesus becoming incarnate. You know, because we love this child who has been made visible to us, we begin to be able to love the God whom we cannot see. And I think that's kind of what this beatitude is talking about, that to stay pure of heart is to be able to keep your eyes on the real things that are actually invisible, the fruit of the Spirit and the presence of love and community. These things are not as tangible as the car in your garage, say, or the money in your bank account, another example. Anyone else? Lisa's got something on this one. You did put your hand up. You weren't adjusting your glasses or anything right now. Okay, good. Yeah, perfect.
I was just thinking about how we talk about people looking at the world through rose-colored glasses. Well, I think, you know, we can put on glasses that have lenses that help us see God around us, or we can put on glasses that are all fogged up and make it harder to see.
That's really great. Okay, Don. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. I was thinking a lot about this. I came up with two things. The first is, those who stir up trouble are the children of someone other than God. Right? If the peacemakers are the children of God, the unpeacemakers are the children of someone else. So next slide. The second thing is, Community building is a holy act. To be a peacemaker is to help people see, you know, back to the Shema that Jesus taught, that God is one. And that means across all the world religions, there's one God. It's to help people see that and also to see that humanity's one. Across the whole world, we're one body of people. We're one children of God. And community building is a holy act because it helps people live inside of that vision. We're one people, we're one God. One people with one God. So what do you hear?
I actually struggle with this a lot. In the Old Testament, there's so many examples of people pursuing God in the name of violence, the name of hatred. And that's celebrated almost in the Old Testament. And I really struggle with that. And I think it seems to fall short. And then the New Testament brings a different message to that. But it is something I wrestle with.
Yes, and if we add our history on top of the New Testament, I'm not saying it should be part of the Bible. But, you know, we have the New Testament and then kind of the writing stopped right after that was written. But if we had continued to write, we would have done the same thing that the Jewish people did. In other words, we would justify our position. And I think that's what we see in the Old Testament, right? We see this history written from the point of view of a single people. And we see what happens when you take the position that, yeah, there's one God, but that God belongs to us. And there's one humanity, but the rest of you better true up to what we're doing. Otherwise, you know, this is what happens. And when we look out in the world today, we see all kinds of violence still being perpetrated in the name of God, whether it's coming from Islamic extremists or Christian extremists or, you know, whatever extremists, it always seems to come from extremism. Extremism is actually the point that there isn't one God and there isn't one people. It's coming from the point that we're right and the rest of you are not. Community building is a holy act because it enters into that place of violence and it seeks to bring transformation. And as we all know, when you enter into that, you risk your life. Not figuratively, literally. Community building is a holy act, and sometimes it has terrible consequences. I don't know if that helps you at all. This is my wrestling too, right? Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And I heard, if you are bullied or slandered for standing up for what is right, then God is very near. And silence is the sworn enemy of justice. Silence is the sworn enemy of justice. And I know that because you're human, when you see terrible things happening to people, I don't care if you're in the grocery store or on the C train station or you see it in the news, your impulse is zip it. Put some distance between you and that thing that's happening. That's our impulse. But Jesus is teaching, you're blessed when you stand up for the person who's in trouble. And I am very, very fond of saying that it wasn't the Roman army and it wasn't the religious leaders that crucified Jesus. What crucified him is that crowd of 5,000 people that he had just fed were silent. Can you imagine 5,000 people, and actually that was just the men that were counted, so can you imagine about 10,000 people marching on Jerusalem to stop that execution? What would have happened? Following Jesus means speaking up in the face of injustice. So how is that hitting you? What do you hear?
I hear, do not be afraid, speak.
Okay. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. I looked back over the whole Beatitudes and I said, Jesus practiced all these things. And he got executed for it. So if you follow Jesus, you should expect trouble. Oh, no, wait, hey, go back. This is the last one. So I didn't put a slide in here, but I have something else to say. If you follow Jesus, expect trouble, because the wealthy, the powerful, and selfish people of the world have means to make your life miserable if you challenge them. Right? This is Mother Teresa now. Do the right thing and challenge them anyway. And challenge them no matter what they say or do. It's like this. God says, what's required of you? I don't want your burnt offerings and your sacrifices. What I want is for you to do justice. That means speaking up for people who are in trouble. It means advocating for people. Love mercy. That means you have to actually know what mercy is, and you have to offer that in place of the rules. So I don't know if you're like me, but I kind of like the rules, and when people break the rules, I want them to get what they deserve. But that's actually not what Jesus teaches. It's not what the Old Testament teaches, not the Shema. Do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. Take your cue from God. So what do you hear about being reviled and persecuted and people saying evil things against you? And it does say falsely. Falsely. It kind of means falsely on account of doing the right thing that you get slandered. What do you hear? Claus has his hand up.
Well, I struggle with this one, but the flip side of this is we're not supposed to, we're the light of the world. So in spite of this, we will be glorified. And I think there's a lot of comfort to take in that, because this is pretty scary stuff.
It is really scary stuff. You know, Oscar Romero was murdered while he was celebrating communion in El Salvador. He lifted the chalice and he was shot. Why? Because he stood up to injustice, because he was advocating for people who were oppressed. It is scary. This is actually where all of our martyrs come from. People who have the guts and the courage to follow and do what Jesus did no matter what, and at the cost of their life. We should be scared. We should wrestle. We should struggle. And it's partly why we have the community, right? We wrestle and struggle together. It's not Claus out there by himself. It's Claus and all of us out there together. I was talking to somebody, you know, a friend of mine, about the Pride Parade here in Calgary. Who saw the Pride Parade or was at the Pride Parade this last year? Like, what a joyful celebration. I'm telling you, if you are depressed, go to the Pride Parade. Go march in the Pride Parade. It is totally amazing. And so I was doing some research on the Pride Parade, and 30 years ago when the Pride Parade started, people marched in the streets of Calgary with paper bags over their heads because they wanted to keep their identity secret because they were being physically persecuted. Advocacy is marching with them when that's the condition they're in. It's being willing to be beaten up too, even though you're not one of them. Imagine the whole city of Calgary, all the Christian churches turning out with them and not caring if people see who we are. That's what Jesus is talking about doing. He's talking about transforming the way things are by putting our butts on the line to do what's right. Okay, now the last one. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. Man, I hate that. I want my reward to be great here. Rejoice and be glad, because your reward is great in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Joy is a learned behavior. You have to practice it. So practice being grateful and joyful, even when the circumstances don't call for it. It's almost like marching in the Pride Parade with the people with the bags over their heads, rejoicing for how it's going to be 30 years from now, because that we're doing that now and we can see the result. Even though we can't see the result. In other words, do your work and trust that the God of the universe is with you. Next slide. Don't forget, you're walking in the way of Jesus and the prophets. It's holy work. So these are the Beatitudes. The crowd at the base of the mountain loves the result. They have someone advocating on their behalf. And not only that, he's powerful. He's healing every sickness, driving out demons, preaching the grace of God, delivering mercy to people. Why? Because he's the source of it all. And so people begin to follow him like he's some sort of magnet and they're metal shavings. How does he teach his people to do what he does with those kind of hangers on? He climbs a mountain, not an easy thing. Those who are really interested in follow him up the mountain. And he sits them down and he lays it bare. This is what it means to follow me. So what did you hear? What does it mean for you to follow Jesus? What does it mean for you to take his teaching seriously and to true your life up to a life of a disciple? Looking back over the whole lecture, what did you hear? You know what I heard? Discipleship is costly. Can you say it into the mic just because people have...
You have to be brave.
What else? What did you hear? You can shout it out, Rhonda. We'll repeat it.
Revolutions are hard.
You know, another thing I heard is that transformation is worth it. It was transformation that created this community. And Jesus' intent is that everyone has a community like this. It's worth it. What did you hear, Pastor Phil?
We have a lot of work to do. I probably have a mic on. I have a lot of work to do, but yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah, I'm interested in leaving behind a planet and a community that blesses your children and your grandchildren. And if I just hang with the status quo, that isn't going to happen. It doesn't happen by itself. What's predictable, actually, is that the marketplace is going to win.
Yeah, the fear is what tends to hold me back. And so much of this stuff really is a direct call and speaking to just, you have to trust. Otherwise, you'll give into the fear.
So just because Pastor Phil said that and it echoes here, for how many of you, just raise your hand really high, does fear hold you back? Do you know what the most often repeated line in the Bible is? Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. And it's almost like the Bible is trying to true us up to be able to see the invisible things and to trust in those above what we see. God is really smart, among other things. But to leave us pretty clear instructions about how to live and then to just keep reiterating, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid. And by the way, the final period on, or maybe it's an exclamation point on don't be afraid, is the resurrection. Jesus' resurrection, right? I like to say that the resurrection is actually the proof that love cannot be killed. You devote your life to love, and what you'll find is that love can't be killed. It keeps coming back. It keeps coming back. Anyone else? What have you heard? All right, thanks for your time this morning. I changed the hymn of the day because singing a happy song about rejoice and be glad didn't seem too fitting with the teaching. So we're going to sing the Canticle of the Turning. Please stand. Let's sing together.